Tonight we have John from San Diego, our speaker. Welcome, John.
Good evening, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is John. Good to see you all. Wow, we got a packed house in here. AA is alive and well, you know. Good to see you guys. And welcome to the newcomers that didn't stand up. I know you're out there. Welcome. Glad you're here. You know, I want to thank a few people. I want to thank Oxnard John, John B., who asked me to speak. He asked me to speak a couple of weeks ago. And he said, John, can you speak for me in June sometime? And I said, sure. And then he texted me a couple of days later, and he said, John, can you speak next week? And I said, sure. That's what we do around here. We say yes, you know what I mean? And so if you come out to see, I believe her name was Yolanda M., who's on the schedule. Sorry she canceled. I hope she's okay. I hope everything's okay with that. But this is what you get. I want to thank my wife, my Lois, as Bubba said, my Al-Anon wife, for coming out and supporting me. I want to thank my sponsor for coming out and supporting me. And I got a lot of friends here. I want to thank everybody. And I hope somebody hears something tonight that they can identify with that makes them want to come back. We want you to come back, man. We want you to come back. And you know what? I really love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love being sober. And if you're new and that makes you sick, I understand you. You know what I mean? When I got here and I heard people stand up here and say, oh, I love being Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm grateful alcoholic, I would mumble under my breath, and you're an idiot. You know what I mean? But I don't think that way no more, man. This program is saving my life, man. It is saving my life. I can guarantee you that. And I'm going to share a little bit of that with you tonight. You know, I love all aspects of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love roundups, workshops, conventions, closed meetings, open meetings, men's meetings. I love all aspects. I love working with other alcoholics. I love my home groups. I have two home groups. One of them is Drunks Only in person. We meet Monday through Saturday at 12:15 at the Linda Vista Rec Center. So if you're ever in Linda Vista and you're and a midday meeting, come join us. We meet in the rec center, and I've got a lot of people, friends from that meeting here today, and I also have another home group. It's called the Writing Sober Group. We meet at the Harley-Davidson shop in Bay Park. The address is 4645 Marina Boulevard. It's right in the Harley-Davidson showroom. You do not have to ride a Harley, but you just go into the showroom. It's a very nice venue, and they'll lead you to their entertainment room back there, you know. And it's good groups. And, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm of the opinion, and make sure you got that, of the opinion, because I'm not speaking for AA as a whole. I'm speaking my opinion. And I'm going to try to keep my talk. I will tell you that drugs are part of my story, but I'm going to try to keep my talk on alcoholism because I believe in the singleness of purpose. You know what I mean? We're here at an AA meeting. So I'm going to talk about my alcoholism, but some stuff may come out about drugs, so that's part of my story. But you know what? I'm of the opinion that the more you're afflicted by this disease, the more I'm afflicted by this disease, the more action I need to stay sober. You know what I mean? That's why I do all those things. You know what I mean? I like general service work. If you've never done general service work, get into it. It might be your thing, man. You know, I like it. I mean, I'm a sick individual. I need every part of it, man. I like going to those assemblies. There's five assemblies a year, five Saturdays, and GSR work. You know, if your group doesn't have a GSR, maybe you should be the GSR because the area needs more GSRs, man, and it's fun. I enjoy it. You know what I mean? I've everybody's got a bad rap on that, but I'm here to tell you it's not that. It's enjoyable. We have fun doing it. You know, I love, I'm a sick individual. I need it all, man. I need it all. So you know, I need it all. Oh, shit. Excuse me. And, you know, I love the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. The history of Alcoholics Anonymous is my thing, man. I love the history of alcoholics. And I'm going to tell you, If you're going to read any history of Alcoholics Anonymous, read AA-approved literature. You know what? Read AA-approved literature. You can find the title of those books on the very last page of your big book. Read that stuff, man. Don't go on the internet and look up AA history. You're going to get a resentment and you can get it drunk, maybe. You know what I mean? But read AA-approved literature. There's good history literature in our approved literature. AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the Old-Timers, Bill Wilson's passed it on. All that stuff's good history, so stick to that, you know what I mean? But I love the history, and I love AA speakers. I love listening to old AA speakers, man. That's my thing. And I listen to this website. I'm not going to give you the website from the podium because I'm also a traditions guy. But if you want to know what it is, get with me after the meeting. But this website, it's got like 6,000 speakers, man. It's got some old-timers, and there's a section in there. It's called Pioneers, and I listen to that section, man, and the audio is terrible, you know what I mean? And you just hear the people hacking and coughing in the background, and you can just visualize the smoke-filled rooms, man, and it's just, and then rah, 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 and that's what I like listening to, man. That's I told my wife recently. I says, you know what? I says, the worse the audio, the better for me, man. I said, that, you know, and it is. It is like that, man. It is like that. You can listen to Dr. Bob, Sister Ignatia, Duke Paddock, Cliff Walker, and you can hear the newer guys, Sandy Beach and Clancy and, you know, Bob D. There's a lot of good speakers, and I love listening to speaker tapes. Good message in speaker tapes. So, good. You know, it's just a good way to spend my evenings, listening to speakers. And that's I spend a lot of time in AA. I'm not even going to tell you how many meetings I go to a week, because then you'll know how sick I am. But I go to a lot of meetings, and I do a lot of AA. I love working with other alcoholics. And so I listen to these speakers, and a lot of the old-timers, they'll start their AA pitch off with a little crackball joke, a little joke, you know what I mean, to break the ice. And for the newcomers, because if you're new and you're just sitting here with a straight face and waiting for your card to get signed or whatever, you know what I mean, it's just break the ice, and that's how I want to. And so I want to start my pitch off. I'm going to start with a little crackball joke, and it'll help me because I'm nervous. You know what I mean? And I'm not nervous to talk to you all. I can talk, man. I can talk. I'll keep talking. Yeah, I see Ray nodding his head back there. He knows. You know what I mean? I can talk. I'll tell you why I'm nervous. I figured it out. It's this damn jacket, man. Hey. I need you to know, man, I'm a T-shirt guy, and I used to be a sloppy, sloppy drunk, man. So I know what I'm nervous about. It's this jacket, and it will be coming off here in a minute. So just so you know that, you know what I mean? Kind of warm in here. So anyway, this old wino, he gets on the trolley car on a Sunday morning, and he's looking like hell, man. He'd been out drinking whiskey all night long, smoking cigarettes and gambling, and he gets on the trolley cart, and he's hanging on the pole, and he's got his newspaper in the hand, and he's bumping into the knees of this priest there. And this priest is just kind of taking it like the priests do, you know, and he's taking it. And pretty soon the wino looks down at the priest, and he says, "Tell me, Father, what causes arthritis?" And this priest is about irritated with this man, and he snaps back at him, and he says, "I'm going to tell you what causes arthritis. Drinking whiskey, smoking cigarettes, staying out all night long, poor diet, all contribute to arthritis." He says, "Why do you ask, my good man?" The wino says, "Well, I read here in the paper that the Pope has arthritis." Yeah. All right. So I need you guys to know, though, I like having fun in sobriety, but I take my sobriety serious. I really do. And I know the seriousness of this disease and the fatalness of this disease. And I'll share some of that with you. You know, this disease, alcohol wants us dead, but it'll settle for miserable, man. You know what I mean? It really does. And there's a lot of alcoholic death in my family. Yeah, it's an honest program, so I'm going to go ahead and get honest, you guys. So I'm going to share with you all in a general way, what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like now. I'm not going to share on the steps or anything like that. I'm going to tell you my story, and that's it. You know what I mean? But before I start, I'd like to ask God to direct my thinking, especially asking that it be divorced of self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Thank you. with that, I think I'll be on better grounds. You know what I mean? And so I'll tell you, I come from a very large family. I have number 8 out of 10 children. I have 4 older brothers, 3 older sisters, and 2 younger sisters. My family is riddled with this disease. I have one brother. My oldest brother has been in Alcoholics Anonymous since 1990. He got sober in 1990. He'll have 34 years on July 8th of this year. Some of the guys here know my brother because they go in that campout that Larry was talking about. And I've lost 2 brothers to this disease in the last 11 years. And I have one brother that's currently killing himself with this disease. He's drinking himself to death. And my sisters, I don't know. I've never seen them control their drinking or stay stopped. So the book says they might be alcoholic, but I don't know. But me and my brothers, for sure, without a doubt, the ones that are alive, you know, got 2 in recovery and one that's drinking himself to death, you know. And my mom was Irish. Her maiden name was Delano, and she's Irish. And my dad was Mexican. And, you know, I was in a meeting recently, and everybody was identifying a CIA. I'm a Catholic Irish alcoholic, you know. So I'm a CIMA. I'm a Catholic Irish Mexican alcoholic. You know, just like Alcoholics Anonymous, you got to outdo them. You got to outdo them, you know what I mean? I would say out-bottom you, but I don't want to offend anybody, you know what I mean? You know, and that's a personality change in itself that I don't want to offend anybody. You know, and I don't know if the fact that I come from a Catholic, Irish, Mexican, alcoholic family, if that has anything to do with my alcoholism. But I'll tell you what, my mom and dad owned a liquor store, and I know that had to do with my alcoholism. I know that liquor store is why my family is riddled with this disease. You know, it absolutely is. And, you know, I'll tell you what, alcohol was causing me problems before I started drinking. When I was 6 years old, 1970, and we went to the mountains. We loaded up our station wagon, and a couple of neighbor families loaded up their station wagons, and we went to the mountains. We went up to Fraser Park, up Pine Mountain, and we went to get some piñones, that's pine nuts. We went to get some pine nuts up there, and we're us kids and all family, we're going to do a picnic. And my grandfather, Grandpa D. Delano, my mom's dad, and my dad were drunker than a skunk. My mom used to tell a story, and she says, oh, they were polluted. They were polluted. So my grandfather and my father are polluted, and you know how it is when we're playing with the kids. They gather the kids, and they say, come on, kids, we're going to play a game. We're going to play Hare and the Hound. So all the kids come around. It's hide and seek, you know what I mean? And little John, I went to hide, and I hide too good. I got lost, and I start running, and I'm just freaked out, and I'm running, and I don't know how long it was before they realized I was missing, but I was gone. I was gone, and I'm freaking out. I can remember it happened. I got lost for 22 hours in the mountains. It was like 40 degrees or lower temperatures. I'm 5, 6 years old, little T-shirt on, and it was just caused by alcohol because my grandfather and my father could not be responsible to watch a 6-year-old kid. You know what I mean? That's alcohol causing me problems before I even started drinking, you know, and it was about 4 years after that when I was 10 years old. I'd be working at the gas station, and stocking the beer box for my mom, and I'd throw a case of beer out underneath the bushes so I can come get it and hang out with the older kids, man. You know, my dad had this mom and pop gas station liquor store mechanic shop operation. If you're familiar with Lake Piru. I come from Lake Piru. Me and Oxnard John come from the same area code, 805 Ventura County. And my dad had this little gas station. He bought it, him and my Grandpa D, the ones I just shared about. They bought this operation in like 1962, about 2 years before I was born. And my dad hired winos. Winos used to operate my dad's business. You know, they were his drinking buddies, and there's 3 of them that I'm going to share real quick on. And one was Shaky Bob and Bobby D and Percy Gonzalez. And these guys were brown bag, bottlenose, winos, Thunderbird, Ripple, whiskey drinking alcoholics. And when I was a kid, 8 years old or whatever, I'd be hanging out. All of us, my family, 10 of us, but they couldn't pay for babysitting. So we all hung out at the gas station. My mom ran the liquor store operation, and my dad ran the gas station and mechanic shop, and that's where we hung out. We shot BB guns, we shot slingshots, caught lizards, you know, my dad had, we just rode bikes, and that was a place where we hung out, and we all played there. So if we're playing there, and I want a poor boy sandwich or something, you know, and my dad would say, okay, you need to work. He's trying to teach us work ethic, and he says, well, you need to work. So he'd say, go help Shaky Bob in the shop. And so I'd go in there, Shaky Bob would be drunk, working on something, and hey, Shaky Bob, what can I do for you? And he'd go, oh, boy, go over there and wash some parts. That's how he talked. He did. He would shake like this, and he'd go. So you know, I mean, that's one of the guys, I wouldn't say I was raised by him, but I was raised around him. And Bobby D, this guy's classic. Bobby D was a short, little, skinny guy. He drank whiskey. He was a whiskey drinker with my dad. Both of them died of it. And Bobby D, this guy could ride a bicycle sitting on the handlebars and looking backwards. And he'd be pedaling around here like a circus act, man, and had his little derby hat, and he was laughing and joking. And one time Bobby D asked me and my buddy Tim, he says, hey, you guys go wash my car. And he had bought this Delta 88 from my dad, you know, big car. He's got a big 455 Oldsmobile in it. And so me and Tim said, well, we better go down the old road and blow out the carbon first, you know what I mean? So we go down the old road, and we open that thing up, and we come around the corner, and boom, we wiped out, man. We hit an irrigation pipe, and we totaled Bobby D's car. And we're about 13, 14 years old, you know, it's just what you do in a little town like Piru, you know what I mean? And Bobby D, he didn't get mad. Nobody, we didn't get in trouble. We weren't drunk or anything. But Bobby D, he laughed, and he says, you little bastard, you wiped it before you washed it. You know what I mean? We wiped it. We wiped it before we washed it. You know what I mean? When I was, this is true, and Percy Gonzalez was a batshit, crazy, stout little Mexican dude. And Percy, he was an emotional guy, man. He'd be crying. My dad would tell me, go throw the trash down at the dump with Percy. And Percy would be, woo-hoo-hoo. And I'd be going, hey, Percy, you okay? You know what I mean? And that's what I was raised around. It, you know, Percy, they would not let Percy own a gun. Percy could not own a gun. And Percy is crazy. You don't want to cross Percy when he's drunk. He'll stab you. He'll stab you. And so Percy didn't get to, he couldn't handle a gun. There was a lot of guns where I was raised around. You know, we knew how to respect a gun. Percy couldn't have a gun, man. He'd use it on himself or somebody else. So Percy couldn't have a gun. It's crazy, you know what I mean? And this is what I'm raised around. I'm just trying to draw a picture of what I was raised around, you know? And, you know, 12 years old, I'm drinking whiskey. There was a hole that was worn out in the liquor store floor about this big. It was a condensation line that wore out the floor. So if I wanted a bottle of whiskey, I'd grab it and I'd drop it down there when my mom wasn't looking and drop it through that hole. And then I could come around later and reach underneath the vent hole and I'd grab that bottle of whiskey. You know what I mean? At 12 years old, I'm drinking on the job, man. I'm not lying to you all, man. 12 years old, it'd be a hot summer day because it gets pretty hot out there, 110 or so. And it'd be a hot day. And, you know, I'd say, I'm going to go straighten out the beer box. Yeah, right. I'd go in the beer box and I'd sit down and have a beer. You know what I mean? And my brothers taught me how to do this. I'm the youngest of five. So I have four older brothers that were showing me all these tricks. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's what we did. That's what we did. In 1981, May 1st of 1981, my dad died of this disease. And we knew Dad was dying of alcoholism. We knew it. And he was looking bad, man. It looked like he ate a sack of concrete, man. He was just really looking bad. His eyes were just, it was bad. And we knew Dad was dying of alcoholism. And the doctor said, Loopy, you better stop drinking or you're going to die. And he tried to get sober. He went to like the Schick Center, one of them places that no longer exist because of the way they did their treatment or whatever. But I remember I was 16 years old or so, and we had to get all the alcohol out of the house. I remember reading the labels, you know, like a mouthwash and NyQuil and stuff like that. All that stuff had to get out of the house because if Dad drank it, he was going to get sick. So they probably gave him antabuse. I don't know. I later on found out that Dad tried Alcoholics Anonymous, but he couldn't put any time together. So May 1st of 1981, my dad died. He had a stroke and died. It was a direct result of alcoholism. And, You would think one out of 10 of us would stay away from booze after that. Like, we knew what Dad died from. We knew. There was no doubt. My mom was clear on that. And no, man, we put it in overdrive, and we just drank. We drank and drank and drank. So at this time, when my dad died, it was a bad deal for my mom. My mom lost my grandfather, the one that I was talking about, Grandpa D, my dad, and my oldest sister. And my oldest sister died of a respiratory problem, not alcohol. But my mom took a big hit in 1980, from 1980 to 1981. So now my mom's stuck with 10 kids, or 9 kids. My sister Terry had passed away. 9 kids. And a business that's no longer a business, man. It was in shambles. You know, the kids been drinking all the booze and taking all the profit of the liquor store, and the gas station was ran down. It was all 1960s equipment, and it's not making any money. You know what I mean? And my mom was, this was all laid on my mom. And you know that when that happened to my mom, that's really when I lost my faith in God. You know, we were raised proper, and we had good upbringing, and I had a Catholic upbringing, but with, you know, I knew what that did to me when I lost my oldest sister, my dad, and my grandpa. But that was my mom's husband, her dad, and her oldest daughter. And I even went to I don't want to get into any dogma, but that was a bad deal. That was a bad deal, you know. And so we tried to hang on to the business for a couple of years. Me and my brother Dave. Dave ended up buying another station in Fillmore. It's about 8 miles away from Piru. But, you know, just like the book says, you know, if a businessman's going to take stock and take inventory, you got to get rid of it. And we knew this business was no longer working. So I we sold the gas stations. My mom hung on to the liquor store for a couple of more years. It was probably the only years that liquor store was profitable, because we were all out of it, you know. And then I got into construction. And I worked in construction for many years in the fire protection industry. You don't have any fire sprinklers here. In the fire sprinklers industry. And I worked in construction for years, long times. I've made good money, spent all that on what I do. You know, in the 80s, 1980s, in construction, it was like you work hard, you play hard, man. 7 to 3:30. You know, at 3:30, the tool belts come off, the tailgates come down, the ice just come out, man. And we drink till dark. Everybody goes home except John. John goes and does what he does, you know, till 2 o'clock in the morning. Wash, rinse, and repeat over and over and over again, you know. I like to say that my drinking journey was much like an old Clint Eastwood movie. The good, the bad, and the ugly. You know what I mean? It was good. It was good as a kid and young and everything, and it got bad and it got ugly. And I'll tell you an ugly story. I can do a whole pitch on car accidents. I've been in a lot of car accidents. I've only been the driver of one, but I have been in some major car accidents, and I'm going to share one of them with you before I move on to the next segment of what I want to talk about. So in 1980, it was Christmas Eve, 1980. My dad was still alive. And it was my mom's birthday, Christmas Eve. Me and my two brothers that have died of this disease, and my buddy Tim, that me and Tim wrecked Bobby D's car, that Tim, the four of us were up in the mountains, and they had been drinking all day. The three of them had been drinking all day, and I was working at the liquor store. And they came and picked me up at 8 o'clock, and I remember I had this big trench coat, and I had my bottle of Jack Daniels in my pocket, which happens to be my drink of choice. And I had that bottle of Jack, and we go up in the mountains, and we're hauling ass, and I got scared because they're drunk, and I'm not. I just got off work. So they said, okay, we'll slow down. John's crying back there, whatever, you know what I mean? And so we were slowed down. We listened to the music, and my brother had a 1973 Caprice. 73 Caprice with a 454, nice big lowrider. And we're cruising around the mountains, and we're coming around the corner, and my brother Andy's, like, talking to somebody in back. And he hit a soft shoulder. Boom, man, we rolled it. We almost hit a tree, but we didn't hit that tree, and we rolled it. My brother JJ sitting shotgun, he comes out right up on top. Boom, he pops out. The car rolled an estimated of 13 times. And everybody got thrown out. We weren't wearing seatbelts back then, you know what I mean? And when that car landed, Boom, it landed up against an oak tree like this. There's John, right there. There's John. I landed right below. I woke up looking at the tire spinning right there in the chassis of the car. You know what I mean? One more roll and you'd have a different speaker here tonight. You know what I mean? If that car didn't hit dead center of that oak tree and if it spun, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. You know what I mean? But is that odd or is that God? You know what I mean? That's just crazy. And so now I get up. I'm like freaked out. I just popped out and I just remember flashes and we had minor cuts and bruises out of all of us. Just crazy. And so now I got woke up and I could hear my brother JJ at the top of the hill. Is everybody, anybody there? Everybody there? And I'm like, yeah, I'm here. And I take off my trench coat and we're going looking and pretty soon Tim's like, I'm over here. So we found Tim. Where's Andy? We're looking for my brother Andy. We can't find him. Where's Andy? And pretty soon, he fell asleep. He got knocked out of the car, thrown out of the car, and was sleeping in the bushes. Man. I mean, it's funny. That's how it is in Alcoholics. But that was some terrible shit, man. So now we all got to climb up this hill. And I'm talking cliff. It was down a canyon. And it was major. And now we're all climbing, scratching and clawing to get back up to the road. Because we had to walk 4 miles to a house from there. We were way nowhere. So we're climbing up the hill. And I thought, oh, I got a bottle of whiskey in that jacket. 16 years old, and I'm at the top of the hill, and it was a not easy climb. And I said, I'm going back down to get that whiskey. I climbed back down that hill to get that whiskey, man, and get that trench coat. I didn't need that coat. It was pitch dark, December, you know. And like I said, I can do a whole pitch on automobile accidents, you know what I mean? I got a few more. The one that we wiped out with Bobby D, and I wrecked a Camaro in 1986, and then I wrecked it with another guy in a little Toyota, thrown out, went through a barbed wire fence, took it out, and woke up in the hospital. You know, just a lot of stuff that happens to us and as we carry on, you know. And before I go on to what happened, I just want you all to know that I believe to my core, I know to the bone, that I would not be here had I not stopped drinking when I did. And I'll tell you why I know that. Because I drank like my dad, and my dad died at 47. My dad drank whiskey, I drank whiskey. My dad didn't start drinking until he was 21 years old and he died at 47. I drank like my dad. I drank like my brother JJ. My brother JJ died at 54 of this disease. You know, his legs just swelled up so tight and purple. And, you know, I every time I'd go see my brother JJ, I'd take a handle of Jack and we'd go out and get her done. You know what I mean? And the last time I seen JJ, I went out to, and he lived in a little trailer out in an oil field lot, kind of like Bobby D and Shaky Bob lived in a trailer behind my dad's gas station. They had a little teardrop trailer with the extension cord, ran out there, no water. I saw my brother JJ ended up dying in this trailer. And my brother JJ refused to say that he was like homeless, and he was just real bad alcoholic. And he had a fairly new truck, and it was just thrashed. And he would rope the door closed, tie it off to the headrest of the passenger seat. And he was driving with a cane braking pedal because his legs weren't working properly, man. And he died of this disease. And, you know, I drank like my brother Andy. My brother Andy died at 55. And my brother Andy, he was a smart man. My brother Andy had a business up in San Jose, and we really didn't know what was going on with Andy. Andy had, he was never borrowing any money from anybody, so and every time we seen him, he had nice clothes, a nice rental car, because he usually flew in from San Jose, and he's showing us pictures of his trips to Ireland and all this, you know. We thought he had it going on. And about 12 years ago, somebody called one of my brothers, I think they called my oldest brother who's sober, and said, hey, if you want to see your brother alive, you better come get him. So my brothers went to San Jose to look up my brother Andy. Like I said, we didn't really know. We thought he had a successful business, and alcohol beat that out of him. Alcohol beat that business out of him and his intelligence. He he ended up with what we call a wet brain. He could not be left alone. When we brought him back, you know, my one brother, he said it was terrible. He said he started crying and just, it was a sad scene. You know, so I drank like my brothers and my dad. And I know, I got sober at 53. I forgot to say my sobriety date is November 4th of 2016. So I got a little over 7 years of sobriety. But, you know, I'm 60 now. So I know that disease, you can only do it so much. I mean, I started drinking at 10 years old. I get sober at 53. So I got over four decades of serious drinking and drugging. You know, I mean, I like to say that I had a problem with glass, you know, in all forms, you know, whether it be a bottle, a shot glass, a glass pipe, the drug glass, glass was my master, you know what I mean? And it was bad. It was bad. You know, now I want to move on and tell you in a general way what happened. So about 8 years ago, there was a really good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, really good man, good AA, and a member of this group. His name was Rufus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You folks that know Rufus, I hope. I got the chills, man. And Rufus died in 2019. Rufus was a good man. Whoo! Rufus is in the house. I got the chills all over my body. If you guys don't mind, I'd like to have a moment of silence for Rufus. Thank you. Thank you, Rufus. So Rufus, he calls me. I knew Rufus because he had been to my mom's house for a couple of events, one of her birthday parties and Thanksgiving or something, and I knew Rufus, a really good man. A good man and a good, he helped a lot of alcoholics. I think he died with 40 years or so of sobriety. And Rufus calls me and he says, John, I hear you might be having a problem with your drinking. He says, would you like to go to a meeting? And I said, sure, Rufus, I'll go to a meeting. You know, I'm thinking it might help him stay sober. So Rufus gave me an address and a time. It was a Saturday. It was a 7 p.m. meeting. It was in Encinitas. And I remember I'm a morning drinker, and I'm drinking in the morning, and I'm going to stop at noon because I'm going to a meeting with Rufus. Noon comes around, I'm going to stop at 2. 2 comes around, I'm going to stop at 4. No, man, I could not not drink. You know what? I could not not drink. I drank all day long. My wife ended up driving me to that meeting because I'd been drinking all day long. So Rufus shows up at the meeting, and he gets out of his car, and he's got a big smile on his face like he does, you know, and I know Rufus, and he's a good guy. And he gives me a hug. He's no longer smiling. Rufus smells me. He smells that I've been drinking, and he's like, oh, man, it's a wet one. You know what I mean? All I can do is pray for him. You know what I mean? You know how we are. You know, I could not not drink. And I don't know what was said at that meeting. I don't remember was. I remember they called on me to speak, and, you know, I'd been drinking all day, and I got up there, and I got emotional. My brother had just died of this. It was a few months after my brother JJ died. And I don't know what was said in that meeting. But I remember when we left that meeting, Rufus still wasn't smiling. I hurt Rufus, and I never got to make amends to Rufus. And I've been thinking about it during this, thinking about my talk, and I'm like, I need to write him a letter and find out. I think he was cremated. I went to his services, but I'll do some research. Anyway, Rufus told me, he said, John, follow me to the truck. I said, okay. And Monica went to the car, and I followed Rufus to his truck. He reached in the back seat of his truck, and he gave me a book. It's a blue book. It's about this big and about that thick. We call it the big book. He gave me a big book, and he said, John, if you really want to get sober, read the first 164 pages and give me a call. Gave me a handshake, got in his truck, and left. And, you know, he left those spiritual tools at my feet. He didn't tell me, John, you better quit drinking or you're going to die like your brothers. He didn't say that, man. He didn't say, John, you better quit drinking. Your brother's pissed off, because I'm sure my brother Dave called him and said, Rufus, maybe you can help him because I can't get to him. You know what I mean? And Rufus didn't do that. Rufus is a good AA, man, a good AA. Left those spiritual tools at my feet. And you know what I thought? I thought, 164 pages? Are you out of your mind? I have never read 164 pages in my life, man. And that was the honest to God truth. I never read it. You know, in school, I would read that back little summary and I'd make a book report out of that. You know what I mean? And that was true. There ain't 164 pages in a Playboy magazine. I ain't read it. You know what I mean? I had never read 164 pages. And I was like, I remember throwing that in the back seat and thinking, well, we better find another way to get sober. So I need to get, I'm kind of trying to judge my time here. So at that time, I was willing, but I wasn't desperate. You know, and a little bit later, I was desperate, but I couldn't be willing because alcohol and drugs are no longer a luxury. It's a necessity. You know what I mean? Glass had me down. My master had me down, and I couldn't be willing. I'm desperate. I know I'm dying. So on November 2nd of 2016, I did something very horrible, very disrespectful to my wife, to my family, to my wife's family. And now in hindsight, you know, well, now I'm beginning to get desperate and willing together. Until I'm desperate and willing, I can't put anything together. I can't put any time together. I can't do anything. And on November 2nd of 2016, I did this horrible thing. And it was my aha moment. It was like, what are you doing, John? You know what I mean? And nothing else. You know, all those things now, this is God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know what I mean? That's God just nudging me, man. Let's wreck another car. Let's send him to jail again. Let's get him fired again. Something to get this guy to know what his real problem is. You know what I mean? And it's drugs and alcohol. And it's just bad, bad. 40-some years, or, you know, over 40 years of this. And so on November 2nd, when this happened, I can't go a day or two without glass to put in my face. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I won't, if I don't have glass, and mainly the drug. I was a tweaker. And if I didn't have none, I'm not getting out of bed. I'm not going to work. I'm not answering the phone when the boss calls. I'm not even talking to my wife. I just roll over and she knows he ain't got no shit. Oh, man. You know what I mean? And I was just a sad existence, man, terrible. So I went into, I asked my wife to find me a bed somewhere. And we went to this first institution, and I'm not going to give names because I say I'm a traditions guy. So we went to this first institution, and went to the intake, and I was honest. I'm done. I'm telling them that how much I drink and how much I smoke and how much I spend and how useless I am. And this counselor or whatever, he asked me this question. He says, John, do you shake when you quit drinking? And I had quit drinking for like 7 months when my brother JJ died, and I didn't shake. I was still smoking meth and smoking weed, but I didn't shake. So I was honest. I was honest with this counselor. I was honest with this guy, and I said, no, I didn't shake. I don't shake. And he said, you don't qualify. And I was kind of relieved, but, you know, I told my wife, I guess I don't qualify. You know what I mean? I guess we got to go to the store, you know what I mean? But my wife's a good Al-Anon, and she's a good woman, and she went home and did some research, and she found me a bed at this place, and I'll say it's very fancy rehab, and I'll say it's in Del Mar, and you can just take it from there. So I go to this place, and now I'm desperate and willing, and I go in there, and I start to participate in my recovery, and they do what they do in those places. They drug you up for the first couple of days, and then they, you know, and then you start doing process groups. And about day three, Glass is trying to pull me out again. Glass is on me, and I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. And I cop an attitude with the counselor there, you know. And I'm like, you know what? Just give me my phone. I'm out of here. And I'll tell you what. when you check yourself into those kind of places, you can leave. They don't care. You know what I mean? I told him, I copped an attitude, and I said, give me my phone. I'm out of here. You know what he did? He gave me my phone, told me, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out of here, man. They didn't need me there. You know what I mean? He told me, get out of there. So I pack my bags, and I'm out of here, and I go outside, and I'm sitting on this rock, and I called my wife, and I said, come get me. I'm not doing this. You know what she had the audacity to tell me? You know what she told me? She says, no. She says, I'm at work. I'm not taking time off of work. You said you were going to do this. Click. She hung up on me. And I've thanked her several times, and I'll thank you at a group level. Thank you. So now I'm outside, and I'll tell you what, you can leave those places, but you can't go back in. That door locks behind you. So I get up and I go to the door and I'm pulling on it. And they're looking at me, and it's all the employees there, the whatever. They know that I just left there with an attitude. So they're ignoring me, you know what I mean? And I'm like knocking, and they're just like looking the other way like they don't hear me. Somebody went and got the counselor, and he comes to the window, and he's like, what do you want? And I was like, come on, man, let me in. Let's give it a shot. And he let me back in, and I stayed there, for 24 days. And when I got released from there, I didn't get the proper exiting like everybody. This place is bougie, man. This place is nice. And when everybody was going to leave, the day they're going to leave, they'd have a breakfast, and they'd get the milk glass and go, clean, 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 and everybody get quiet, and somebody come up and say how much they love you, and then you get to say how much you love them. And I didn't get that kind of exit because... Because I'm a bad apple, man. I'm a bad apple. Something happened, and they says, oh, insurance is up. You're out of here. I'm like, oh, after breakfast tomorrow? No, you're out of here now. So I got my feelings hurt, and I'm just 20-some days sober, and I'm still a mess. And I didn't get to say goodbye to these people. I met some good people there. You know what I mean? You know how we do when we're with like-minded people, and there were some good people in that rehab, and I didn't get to say goodbye, and I was hurt. I was a mess when I got out of there, and I walked out of there, and I had my stuff, and I crying or whatever, pissed off, and I told my wife, "You stop at the first liquor store you see," and she doesn't know what to do. Poor thing. She's just like, "Oh man," and we get less than a half a mile down the road from the rehab. Right there. There's one right there. There was a gas station right there with sold beer and wine and stuff. And I got out of the car, man, and I got out and I kicked the tires and I kicked the trash can and I kicked the rock. And I walked around the car. I walked around the car a couple times, and you know what I did? I got back in the car, man. I didn't drink. I did not drink. And is that odd or is that God? You know what I mean? And I went home, and I need to get moving. I want to tell you this one story. When I got home the next day, it was a couple of days before Thanksgiving of 2016, a couple of days before Thanksgiving. And I was at home. I'm unemployable. I'm home alone. And I made potato salad. And my mom had taught me how to make potato salad. And this potato salad came out perfect, man. It was had the right amount of mayonnaise, the right amount of olives and eggs, and I start missing my mom. My mom had died 6 months before I got sober. She never got to see me sober, and she would have loved to see me sober. And I'm in the kitchen, and I remember I had that big old wooden spoon full of potato salad, and I'm crying hard by myself in the kitchen, missing my mom. And I was like, I got the efforts, man. I'm out of here. I'm gonna go get a bottle of Jack, and it's gonna be a big bottle, man. And no sooner than I thought of it, I thought how disrespectful that would be to my mom. My mom was a beautiful lady. And if I would have went and drank, that would have been so disrespectful. And it was like if I had recoiled from a hot flame. I knew I wasn't going to drink. There was no way in hell I was going to go drink over the grieving over my mom's passing, because that would have been so disrespectful. So now I'm in the living room or in the kitchen, and I got that big old spoon of potato salad, and I'm crying, and I just start laughing. I'm crying, and I'm laughing. And you know what? I knew I wasn't going to drink. You know what? And I used my mom. a few times when in early sobriety, when I had that terrible urge or whatever, you know what I mean? My mom is not God, I will tell you that, but she's my angel and she kept me in check. You know what I mean? And she helped me in hard times. You know what I mean? That's what I use for my angels. So now I want to move on to what I'm trying to be like now. And I'm cutting myself short. So, you know, I think it's good that we check ourselves every once in a while, what it's like now. I should be using I statements, that I check myself every once in a while, what it's like now. And I do it often. And I do it in an inventory type of way. And I call it my growing or going inventory. Am I growing or am I going? Because if I'm not growing, I'm going, and I don't even know it. You know what I mean? I need every aspect of this program, like I started off my talk. I need it all. So I'd sit quiet, and I think to myself, am I going to enough meetings? Am I working with enough alcoholics? Am I doing enough service? Do I meet with my sponsor enough? Am I putting enough in the basket? All these things, and the common denominator there is enough. Am I doing enough? Because I'm not one of those guys that can get sober on one meeting a week, no steps, no sponsor, and just stay sober. You know what I mean? I don't want that kind of sobriety, man. You know what I mean? I don't want that kind of sobriety. I want serenity. I want to be sober. I don't want to be sober. You know what I mean? And there are people that do it. I know people that never worked a step in their life and they're sober. You know what I mean? But that's not what I want. You know what I mean? I want to be sober. I want to be like some of the elder statesmen here in the room. You know what I mean? And you know, Dr. Bob, he used to say that you can boil this thing down to two words, love and service. And I like that. Love and service is good. You know, but where I'm at in my recovery, if I was to boil this thing down to two words, it's going to be identification and transformation. Identification and transformation. You know, that's what my program is about. And it might evolve. It might get something else. But right now, identification and transformation. And I'll tell you, I get the identification from coming to meetings, to listening to other alcoholics, to working with alcoholics. You know, and the big book especially, is where I get identification. You know, I'm a fan of the stories. I know the 164 pages of the meat and potatoes of the program, best read with a sponsor so he can keep it simple and explain to you all that stuff that's going through there. And you just do it slowly. You'd be surprised how much simplicity has to do with spiritual growth. Spiritual growth is about being simple, man. You know, and so I get the identification from the big book. You know, and the stories, I'm a fan of the stories. I like the stories. When I got sober, I would read a story at night and just kind of identify it. It could be a teenage lesbian girl, but if I read it with an open mind, I can identify with her disease. You know what I mean? If I go to a meeting, if I catch myself, if I'm growing or going, if I say, I'm not going to go to that meeting, Billy shares too long, George says the same thing all the time. You know what I mean? We've all been there. And you know, but if I can just tweak that a little bit, very simply, and just say, I'm going to go and see if George says the same thing again. I'm going to go and see if Billy talks too long. You know what I mean? If I can look at it that way, I'm growing, man. I'm growing. If I look at it the other way, I'm going. I'm going to start not going to meetings, you know, you know what, it even says it in the preface. The last few sentences of the preface says, if you have a problem with drinking, we hope that you will pause while reading one of these 42 personal stories and think, yes, that happened to me. Or yes, I felt like that. Or most importantly, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. Identification. You know what I mean? That's identification. The transformation, you guys, that I was talking about, the transformation, wow, is beautiful. I am not the same person I was that came to you 7 years ago. I don't look at you the same. I don't look at me the same. I don't look at God the same. And I don't look at God's universe the same. Just like the big book says, you know what I mean? The transformation, when I let it happen, when I keep it simple. You know, when I try to push anything, I'm blocking the sunlight of the Spirit. You know, when I pray, I talk to God like I'm talking to you guys. My prayers are, and I say it out loud. I pray out loud. Every once in a while, my wife will say, "Who are you talking to down there?" And I'm like, "God." You know what I mean? And that was what I do. You know, I don't hit my knees. I don't kiss the ground. I don't do any of that. You know what I mean? I don't try to push anything. I try to just do it and keep it simple. You know, and where I'm at with my spiritual growth right now has to do with simplicity. I call it micro joys. Recognizing the micro joys, the little things. You know what I mean? Like the smell of cut grass. You know, the ground after a good rain. You know, I bought my wife this orchid for Thanksgiving. This thing is beautiful. I get up real close and watch, and I make sure that the blinds are getting enough sun, and just watch this thing. It's beautiful. That's the little things. You know, I always thought that I was going to get the Cadillac or the house on the hill. I'm not looking for that no more, man. I'm looking for those micro joys. You add those micro joys up, and they become huge. They become big. I'm going to share one that happened to me a couple of weeks ago. And it's a very simple thing. Very simple thing. And it's been on my heart, and it's felt good, and I'll share it. So a couple of weeks ago, I was driving to a meeting in La Jolla, and there was this elderly gentleman. I'm sorry, I gotta have something. There was this elderly gentleman, and he's waiting to get in the crosswalk. And nobody's stopping. It's in La Jolla Boulevard. Everybody's going around those roundabouts, and everybody's too busy, and I'm watching this old man. And so when I get there, I stop, and I wave him into the crosswalk. And this old dude, he steps into the crosswalk, and he's got this big old beautiful smile, and he's waving at me, and he's saying thank you, and I'm waving back and smiling. Things were better because we were together, you know what I mean? The ripple effect of right action is amazing. It's a beautiful thing. You know what I mean? I'm a strong believer in the love you see in other people's eyes is the love that you're putting out there. You know, if I'm not putting it out there, I'm probably not going to be getting it. I don't want to say you won't, because there are good people. But I'm more likely to get love when I'm putting love out there. Just like in the St. Francis prayer, man, you know. It's just a beautiful thing. Just like, you know, if you're sitting across the table from a new guy, man, and this guy's trying to get sober and, you know, sponsee or whatever, you know what I mean? And you're just sitting across the table reading a big book with him, and you're trying to keep it simple. Simple. Simple's important, y'all. And you're just trying to keep it simple, and you're explaining what you've learned along your spiritual journey, and then you're trying to explain what that passage means to you, and sometimes two sponsees later, that passage could mean something else, but, you know, that's the way this program works, you know what I mean? But if you're sitting across the table and you're watching somebody get sober and you're helping this guy get sober and all you're doing is reading a book with them, it's simple. But to watch their lives get better, to see loneliness vanish, to have a host of friends about you, this is something you don't want to miss. You know where I got that? Page 89. You know what I mean? That I'll tell you what, to watch their lives get better, that is no micro joy, man. That's a cat's meow. That's what we do this for, to be of maximum service to God and to our fellows. To watch somebody else's life get better, oh, that's the shit there, you know what I mean? That's what we do this for. You know, I'm running out of time, but you know what? I always like to talk to anybody that's new. Even if you didn't identify as new, you know what I mean? If you feel lost and confused, and you don't know what to think of all this, and you don't think that speaker up there knows what he's talking about, whatever. You know what I mean? I'd like to say, welcome to the world's largest lost and found. That's what we are. That's what we are, you know? We're lost and found, man. We're lost and found. You know what I mean? And I was lost for many years, man. I was lost for many years. And if you're new to this program, and you're trying to figure this program out, you're trying to figure these steps out, you're trying to figure God out, you're trying to figure out how you can do this without a sponsor, that's a good one, huh? We're, you know, all the things that we're trying to figure out, we try to figure out when we get here, set that aside, man. Set aside everything you think you know about yourself, about God, and about recovery so you can have an open mind and a new experience. This program is not designed to be figured out. There ain't no chapter in the book that says, this is how we figured it out. It says, this is how it works. And then at the beginning of this how it works, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. How simple is that? Follow the path of others who are staying sober and who are enjoying their recovery. It's very important you follow the ones that are enjoying recovery, because if you're not enjoying recovery, you're doing it wrong, man. You know what I mean? And I'll just finish with 9 words. Keep it simple, trust God, clean house, and help others. Thank you.
Thank you, John, and we hope you come back. Let's give John a hand. Hey, John. I would also like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a great dinner. Thank you. We'll now circle up and close. John will lead us in the Serenity Prayer. Joyce, what are these all about?
Alrighty, after a moment of silence for the alcoholic who still suffers and the children.